This is Hannah Samick, and you're listening to the Strive for Zero podcast. Our mission is to empower Rhode Islanders through education on legislation, current events, and statistics around homelessness and the affordable housing crisis. We want to amplify the voices of the unhoused population in Rhode Island and those who work with them in order to combat negative stigmas and reach effective solutions. Today, I want to share with you an awesome interview with Russ Partridge, Executive Director at the Warm Center in Washington County. I met Russ at the newest of Warm's shelters located right on the University of Rhode Island campus. Come inside with me and be immersed as Russ shows us around and gives insight into the truth about homelessness in Rhode Island. We hope you enjoy this episode.
This is where they have dinner, but this is really the congregate area for all of the family. Staff is at a meeting right now, so.
Wow, this is pretty nice.
So this is the common area for families. Each of the pods have one of these. So you can see it's a four bedroom, so we could even do, five if we needed to. But each family has its own room, which is really helpful. And just having the sense of, I can get away from everybody else, and I can close the door, and I can be okay. One of the harder things, I think, and I think families would agree, is that they have a congregate bathroom. Making all of those kinds of schedules can be difficult, but it's also a way that families can learn how to kind of renegotiate and how to get back into into being with around other people. We've already been able to take people from literally living in their cars with their kids to permanent housing. So it works out really well. Why don't we go sit?
Oh, there's even like a little outdoor area there.
So yeah, each pod has its own screened-in porch, and families will have access to that in the summertime as well.
Wow.
So, it's not bad.
How do people like apply to get housing here? How do you decide who gets to live
in
here?
In order to come into shelter, families or individuals have to be literally homeless,
yes.
Which means they have to have stayed in a place that is not meant for human habitation.
Okay.
So, when families reach that point, they are supposed to go through, there is a system in Rhode Island called the Coordinated Entry System. The Coordinated Entry System is the clearinghouse for anyone who is homeless and in need of shelter. So family A becomes homeless, they have to call Coordinated Entry. Coordinated Entry then says, well, we have no shelter beds available, and we'll call you tomorrow, and you have to keep calling every day. And the big question is, what happens to that family? They really are in the waiting, and may need to continue to stay where they have been staying. And for many of our families, it's in the car. But in the event that there is shelter space available, Coordinated Entry directs them to the shelter space that is available, and then they come, and if they were referred here, they would come, we would do an intake, we would verify that they meet the criteria to be in the shelter, and then they would, if we had an open space, they would come in.
Okay.
Sometimes and it's not uncommon for us or for other shelters that people will show up on the doorstep saying, I'm homeless, I have nowhere to go, and I need some place to stay. So what we do at Warm is we have several other projects other than this. We house, on average now, about 170 people a night. Through now, I think, 6 different shelter configurations of what we have. So, so if a family or individual shows up, as they usually do, and I tell everybody this, Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock, before a long weekend, you can guarantee that the crisis will walk in the door. It's just sometimes the way that this works. And so what we will do in situations like that is we'll simply put a family in a motel for 3 or 4 nights until, so we'll give them a place to be, and then we can start to see whether or not they're appropriate for any of the programs that we have. But in our agency, we won't let a need go unmet. We really do want to know what's going on and how can we help. So that's the long way around of how do people get here.
Yeah.
So there are a variety of gates, so to speak, that people can come through.
Okay. I wanted to mostly just kind of pick your brain about how things have changed, like, post-pandemic, and with pandemic aid being obviously drawn back.
Yeah.
How is that?
It's changed completely.
Okay.
And not in a good way. Okay. I have been doing this work for about 40 years, specifically with homeless families and individuals for about 30. Prior to the pandemic, you would find times that you would get a lull where people wouldn't be, where you would have empty beds. Now, that no longer exists. Beds are occupied 99.9% of the time. But you still have all of these people who are coming in on a regular basis needing a place to go. Up until we started this project here, Warm had an emergency shelter project in which we served 5 families. We are now serving 15 families. Same thing with adults. We used to have a winter shelter program that housed totally for the 7 months of winter, October through March. We would have a total of 12 people. This past season, we've served over 40. Generally, we have had 20 people living outside, individuals living outside. The other 40 is an easy number now. And there just continues to be more and more and more and more people coming to the door. Reason being, prior to the pandemic, we could find apartments that people could rent, say in Westerly or in Peacedale or other areas throughout the state. We could find a 2-bedroom apartment for $800. Doesn't exist anymore. A lot of the families that we see and individuals that we see now were stably housed prior to the pandemic and through the pandemic. But now, as leases expire, landlords know that they can get significantly more money. They are not renewing the leases, and people need to vacate because they can't afford what the new lease is. So the POMOs. And one of the largest growing demographics that we see are people over the age of 65 who have never been homeless in their life, had always worked, and some of them still work. They were paying $800 a month for their apartment. And they were told, you have 45 days to get out. So I've lived somewhere for 15 years, and I have 45 days to leave with no place to go. Because the other thing that you have to figure is if somebody has to leave an apartment, have to find someplace else to live, immediately off the bat, it's going to cost them more in rent. But they will also have to come up with first month's rent, security deposit, and sometimes more than that. Have to have credit score that will meet the property owner's expectations. Our folks don't have that. They just don't. It's not, some have made bad decisions, but some simply just don't make enough money. To see people who are in their mid-70s living in a homeless shelter. Kind of tough.
Really hard to hear. This is a question that I don't want to ask because I'm very scared of the answer. But who do you think is, and this isn't something that I came up with ahead of time, but like I have to ask you, who do you think is replacing these people in these houses? Do you think it has to do with students living there and knowing that they can get higher rates from students?
No, I actually don't. I don't think it's that. I think that it is... housing is so difficult to find. So, folks who you know, certainly in other areas of the state are seeing the same thing. And so a lot of it is if I can, people will pay and property owners will charge what the market will hold. And that's really what it is, I think, particularly in this area. You know, a lot of our folks in the beginning couldn't, you know, not only they couldn't afford even a winter rental, you know, but I think the driving factor is really economics, is that folks are not making enough money to be able to afford rent. I understand it from a business perspective. If I have rental property, I'm running a business.
Yeah.
But all of those things combined has made it much more difficult for people on the lower income brackets to be able to find housing.
So, like, what steps are you taking right now? I mean, obviously you have this place. What would you say, like, your greatest area of need is at the moment?
The greatest area of need is really the development, and the answer to homelessness. It's really simple. It's actually very simple. It's production of affordable housing. And we are doing, as a state and a community, we are doing much better, but we're still four years away from having the number of units that we really need to have.
And in the interim, what are you guys, going to do?
Continue to do what we're doing. We raise money to be able, because not every project that we run is fully funded, so we have to be able to keep the staff going and the lights on, so to speak. We're in the process of looking at a couple of different properties for development of affordable housing. So I'm hoping that the state will continue to fund as it has and see that the need for emergency shelter and shelter for individuals and families. Without this, I would right away have 10 families who are back out on the street. And kids who are not going to school, and kids who are not having their medical needs met, and they're not having their nutritional needs met. Without shelters, you know, we're pretty lucky down here because we're able to meet a good majority of the need, not all of it, but a good portion of it. Without these kinds of programs, you would see many, many more tent cities than what we have. And so, you know, keeping people housed is what we do and what we're trying to continue to do.
So is there anything, like, specific that, like, I'm in, like, a professional public writing class, so what I'm trying to do is find a way to make this actionable for, like, regular people. What do you want people to be, like, like, is there a bill to be supporting for this specific grant?
Yes.
Is there something, like, a ballot measure that I can really lock into?
Vote. Really paying attention to and places that you might want to check out. The website for the Rhode Island Coalition for the Homeless and the website for Rhode Island Housing. The Coalition for the Homeless will give you background on where we stand as far as the numbers of people seeking who are homeless and so forth, but they will also show you, they should have it up on their website by now, what the political agenda is for this legislative session. Getting people to understand that homelessness is not what you think, okay? It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the drunken bum on the corner. Okay. And it's not that those cases don't exist. They're really the minority of the people that we see. People who are here, you'll see there's not a lot of families here, okay, now, because they're all working. So this is getting people to understand that most of the homeless people work. They just can't afford the rent. And getting folks to understand as well that the development of affordable housing is cost effective. in the long run. Because if I can house somebody, use of community services go down, use of emergency rooms go down, use of rescue, fire, police, they all go down, and it helps.
So you said that before the pandemic, you would have rooms that were just empty. You would have, is there anything, like, is there a project that you're feeling really optimistic about right now?
I am very optimistic, actually, in overall, because over the last 2 years, I've heard from state legislators and from the governor's office that affordable housing and homelessness is really on their top of their agenda. I can say that that had not been the case in the past. So they're looking to make a lot of changes. But then it gets into, some people are not always as optimistic. They don't want homeless people in their neighborhood. They don't want homeless people living next to them. When in fact, you wouldn't know the difference. Not in every case, but in many cases. So it's the net. Educating people around the not in my backyard.
I've read research that says that, like, the more contact people have with people who really are homeless, the more that thought is removed, and the more positively they feel towards initiatives like this.
Yep.
And so I guess my next question would be, like, how do you think it's most, like, how are we going to combat that? How do you think it's the most productive way to do
it? I think it's up to us who are in the business to have a huge role in doing that. And you do that by opening the doors. If you have a question, come on in. We'll show you what we do. We'll introduce you to some of the folks. Come and see who's here. Come and see the projects that go on. Those kinds of things change people's perception. And I want people to ask questions. I want people to ask questions about the organization. I want people to ask questions about the people we serve, because it isn't what you think. And so I think finding ways to do that. And opening up the doors. You know, some people have mental health issues. Yes. Some people have addiction issues. Yes. Some people have both. Yes.
But there are house people that have all of that as well. It's just behind
closed
doors.
It's life.
Yeah.
You know, and there, but for, as the saying goes, there, but for the grace of God, go I. You know, but you're right. There are people who go through this every day who don't become homeless, but they have support system. Some have had a long-term history, you know, family history of being homeless. So how do we break those cycles? And we break those cycles by employment and education. You know, those are the big things.
Do you see that a lot, where it's like cyclical and it comes from?
I see some of it, but I wouldn't call it a lot.
Okay.
When I started doing this in the beginning, there was more of that. But now, and certainly over the last 3 years, it's just economics. It's just where you fall.
Yeah, it's a lot more, like, unprecedented.
It's much more difficult now. I tell a story of, you know, so people say, how does somebody become homeless? How does somebody end up here? How does a single mother with 3 kids end up here? It's as simple as a flat tire. That's it. No more, no less. Simple as that. Because this is how it happens. So here you go. You have a single mom living in an apartment, housed, working at Walmart, McDonald's, anywhere. She's on her way to work. Okay, has dropped the kids off at school. On her way to work, she gets a flat tire. Okay, she doesn't have the money to fix the flat tire. She doesn't have AAA because she can't afford it. So she takes a risk and she leaves the car because she's got to get to work. Because if she doesn't get to work, she doesn't have a job. So she leaves the car to go to work. By the time she gets back to the car, one of two things have happened, depending upon where she left it. More than likely, if nothing else, it's been ticketed. Okay, she's received a ticket for parking on the side of the road, or it has been towed. If the vehicle has been towed, it's over. Because mom, not only can she not afford the ticket, she can't afford the tow, she can't afford to get the car fixed. She leaves the car and, you know, if they tow it, they hold it until you pay for the tow. If she leaves the car more than 2 days, all of those storage fees, which are generally around about $50 a day, she can't pay. So she loses her car.
Yeah.
She loses her car, she loses her transportation. She loses her transportation, she loses her job. That's how she becomes homeless. It's a flat tire. And to know, if you ask, you know, the way to educate, or how do we educate folks, is really to kind of put it in common sense terms and really kind of bottom line terms, I guess is a better way to phrase it. You know, if we're all just a flat tire away from becoming homeless. You know, I'm a little bit better off. I can get my tire fixed. But if I'm a single mom with two kids, it's potentially over. And that's how folks end up here. Yep, we have people who also make bad decisions and bad choices. They may gamble, they may use substances, they may, you know, that also is, you know, homelessness is a consequence of that. And those kinds of things we work with as well. We, you know, get people treatment that they need. But to understand, the bottom line is, it doesn't take much to get here.
Maybe this is a naive question, but when you think about like the cost of those things, why do they cost so much? If it's like, why isn't it done on like a, like why is there no way of hearing or like case by case for things like that, where someone can come to someone and say like, this is going to put me under, like,
right.
Why?
Luckily,
why,
and I'm glad you asked that, because luckily at WARM we do have such a program. So it's called homelessness prevention. So we often, through grants that we write for, from the Rhode Island Foundation, from Ocean State Charities, from many of the foundations, we ask for money for what is called basic needs. Those funds allow us to pay for somebody's car, to pay, so provided they meet the economic guidelines. We're able to do those things so that we can prevent. But there's only so much money to go around. But we do, and there is a lot of conversation that's happening now on a state level about setting up programs like that so that, you know, if somebody has a crisis, there is a place to go to get some relief so that it will prevent homelessness. But, you know, it's one of those things, you can't catch everybody.
Yeah.
You know.
I wouldn't have known about a service like that without like,
right,
being here and
yep,
talking to you. And
yep,
so it makes me wonder like how many people don't know that that's available to them.
Correct. A lot.
Yeah.
And the other thing, you know, it's really hard. It's really hard for people to ask for help.
Yeah.
You know, people have a lot of pride. And, you know, often people will start. Another scenario is a lot of the places that people work at don't have sick time. They don't pay sick time. And our folks are on such a ledge that 2 days of missed work starts this whole snowball of going of where, you know, they have to pay for the electric, they have to pay for the gas, they have to pay for their food. And so they start to move money around. And sooner or later, it shows up and they're short on rent. We have a program that people can come and say, you know, I was out sick, or I was out of work because one of my kids was sick, or so forth. And, you know, and I'm going to be short on my rent. Is there a way to help? We have programs that are able to do that. So those kinds of things are really helpful. And we do that, we get to do that a lot, not only through the foundations that are in the state of Rhode Island, but through our donor base. Our folks are very supportive of the programs that we run.
And are your donors like local people?
Primarily local, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
But we do have folks from all over the country.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, have a really good donor base.
Are you just based in Rhode Island, or do you have other locations?
Just Rhode Island, just southern Rhode Island.
Okay.
But we work with all of the other shelters across the state.
Okay.
But we run this family shelter in West Kingston. We run a shelter for single individuals in Peacedale and Westerly, and then we have various sites of other shelters and or permanent housing. But at any given time, you know, 150 to 170 individuals a night.
Yeah, and like looking around, this isn't somewhere that you would think has like a homeless crisis, because again, you have that image of people on the street and people in tent encampments and things like that. But it is like a very like large problem here. It's only because of organizations like this that you don't visibly see it.
You don't see it.
I feel like I hear people say like, I don't want to see it as long as it's like,
and there's some of that.
It's frustrating. Do you think that the lack of visibility is like a good thing, but it's also not as good because you have people who are my age who don't see anything.
Right. That's a really, really good observation, Hannah. You know, and to be honest with you, as an executive director who has to raise the money, I use both sides of the sword, so to speak. You're right. We do a really good job. That's why you don't see the homeless people who are in Washington County.
Yeah.
And then there's the other thing is that there are a lot of homeless people in Washington County. We really need your support to be able to provide services for those folks. But yeah, there is, you know, I say all the time, be careful of the good job that you do. You may put yourself out of business.
Yes.
And in some ways, I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah.
But, you know, to let folks in the community know, and most folks here in Washington County, folks know that it's the Warm Center, the Johnny Cake Center for Hope in South Kingstown, and Johnny Cake Center in Westerly. We're really the core of the social service providers, and we work very tightly together to make sure that folks folks who are struggling are not struggling as much because of the organizations and what we do. We work really tight together, which is another thing that we have down here that you do not see in other parts of the state, are the social service organizations working really closely together to resolve the issues of poverty and homelessness in our region.
Yeah, I feel like it would be, at least like from my outside perspective, I figured it would be more of, it's like surprising to hear that it's a team effort, but also encouraging, just because I feel like there would be some form of competition for getting those grants.
Yeah, that's what makes it really cool to be down here. I can call Kate Brewster up at the Johnny Cake Center, who's the executive director at Johnny Cake, and say, hey, I have a family we need to put in a motel. I can only afford X amount of dollars. Can you pitch in the rest? And her response will be, yep, sure, got you covered, no problem. When you have those kinds of resources within agencies, it makes it really enjoyable to do this very difficult work because we're working together. And we're all going after the same pot of money when it comes to grants and so forth, and we recognize that. But I think in the same breath, I know that if I don't get it, Kate's going to get it. And I know I can go to Kate and get from her. And as she knows, she can do from with us. We're on the phone all the time, sharing.
That's really refreshing to hear, because I feel like...
And we have a group. Our group is called the Basic Needs Network. So this is really about 35 nonprofits throughout Washington County who meet on a regular basis, once a month, for an hour. It's very strict, to just talk about trends that we're seeing and resources that are available, so that at least once a month, everybody's touching base and saying, okay, so what is it that what are we seeing? Do we have the resources to fit the need? And if not, how can we make that happen?
That's
it's very cool.
Very productive, yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool. And that's been going on for about 30 years.
Wow.
Once a month. And just to share information and to touch base. And we really take care of each other. It's a tough business at times, emotionally, but we really take care of each other. I'm one of the lucky ones in the sense of I don't hate going to work every day. I'm very blessed to be able to see that. do that. It's pretty cool. I'm lucky.
That's really awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much.
For you're very welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to Strive for Zero podcast with guest speaker Russ Partridge of the Warm Center in South County. And we'll see you next week.